Coming up on a big time news day for the next Fan Up podcast, we might have a new Panther super fan.
Nick, you sound terrible. You look awful. You are very in the league. I think you're going to fit in just fine.
Excellent. We've got Christopher Harris talking fantasy football.
Well, you know what I find is that Twitter is a funny thing.
Is he referring to this story?
We're reaching the point where Blake Bortles is going to drop a bottle of aftershave on his foot and break a toe, and that'll be him for the season.
I don't know. We'll talk about lots of good stuff coming up now.
Do we have room for one more breaking story? I just getting word that the NFL is looking into Ezekiel Elliott pushing one of his fellow classmates in seventh grade on the playground to cause him to scrape his knee, and he may be suspended for 2 games now.
Okay, and that too.
Listen. Hello. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to our regularly scheduled edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. Hello, everybody. I'm Pod Vader here with 5.5 super fans. I mention a half because we have a guy who's sort of trying out as our Carolina Panthers super fan, but more on that when we get to that point. Let's introduce you to the 5 super fans that are here with us. And as always on a Thursday, I am joined by our Redskins super fan from across the pond, Neil. Hello, Neil.
Hey, Jay. Hey, guys. Glad to get started. Jay, I'd be Robert. So, Rob, all about rabbits.
Rob, who he's mentioning, is our Bills super fan. What did you learn about rabbits, Rob?
I learned that a bunch of rabbit holes is called a warren.
There you go. We have a warren of rabbits here in my neighborhood. They literally litter all of our yards here in lovely Connecticut. It's kind of annoying, actually. Some of our other Thursday regulars is our Eagle superfan, James. Hello, James.
Hey, guys. How's everyone doing?
We are doing just fine. Our guys from the prison zones, first in prison zone one, our Dolphin superfan, Andy. Hello, Andy.
How is everybody? We're inching so much closer to training camp and then preseason and then the painstakingly long and then before we know it, it's February and it's all over. We need to cherish every single one of these days as we move closer collectively to football.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard that the NFL football season is painstakingly long. I think it's painstakingly
because it's,
short.
I meant to say it's painful because I'm a Dolphins fan, and last year was just like such a dream, and I don't know if that's going to happen again. More often than not. Maybe not for you, Pod, but it's painful for the rest of us.
I guess so. And the guy who said he was moving out of prison zone 6, our Dallas Cowboys superfan, Kevin.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Pod. Yeah, I forgot that I have to commute back to prison zone 6 on a daily basis for work, so I only temporarily moved out. But I'm looking forward to Zeke's birthday party this week. I'm actually preparing to go. He asked me to bring some unregistered weapons, so hopefully the NFL doesn't find out about that. Let's get this started.
Oh, we're going to be talking about Ezekiel Elliott in just a few minutes.
Yeah, but
I mentioned that we have a half super fan. Our Carolina Panthers position is open, and we're going to be talking to a gentleman by the name of Nick Howell in just a few moments to talk a little bit about what's going on in Carolina. We can call it a tryout if you'd like to be the Panthers superfan. We have other positions still open. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Detroit Lions superfan positions are still available. So if you're interested in joining us, like Nick is going to here in just a minute or two, send us that email, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can also tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, you can always get in touch with us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU Podcast, or just search Next Fan Up on your Facebook page. It comes right up. All right. Hey, let's talk a little bit Carolina Panthers here. So here we go. We have a potential Carolina Panthers super fan. He really loves the Carolina Panthers, unlike the rest of us on this podcast. And that is Nick. And I'll let Nick explain who he is. Hi, Nick. How are you?
I'm great, Pod. It's good to be with you guys. My name is Nick. I hail from Charlotte, North Carolina, even though I've lived in Los Angeles for the last 10 years or so. Still a very diehard Carolina Panthers fan. Love and respect those guys and what they do over there.
So do you love and respect the way that they got rid of their former GM?
No.
Tell us a little bit about what you feel is going on there with your team. What is Carolina thinking right now?
To understand what is going through their heads, you really have to understand the Richardson family, and the key word there is family. And there's something very honorable about the family approach to the South and how things are done in large Southern families. One thing that the New Englander Gettleman got himself in trouble doing was being real and being a real person and removing emotion from the equation and being a businessman. And that has served him and Carolina, the team and the community very well over the past few seasons. We'll not talk about 2016, but that said, before him, his predecessor, Marty Herney, coddled players, wanted to make sure that all of the veteran players had big, long retirement contracts and all kinds of stuff. And as you guys know, that got us into salary cap hell that Gettleman, the savior, got us out of by doing some of the things that were kind of deemed questionable over the last few seasons. But it got us out of that trouble and allowed us to move forward. So the thing that's gotten him in trouble recently or this week is Greg Olsen, the conversation around his contract. He's got 2 years left on his contract. He's not happy about that. And now they're trying to get that extended or, quote unquote, give him a retirement contract. And Gettleman just wasn't happy about that. So after Smitty, after Josh Norman, after D'Angelo Williams, all of that stuff happened over the last few years. It was kind of a three strikes and you're out sort of situation where Jerry Richardson wanted to maintain those guys and that relationship and that family. And Gettleman wasn't just going to do it. And I imagine there were some bad words that were said behind closed doors that we'll never hear.
So it's funny because I was going to say when all of your ex players are coming out and saying we hate him, to me that sounds like, well, it sounds like you had the perfect GM in place.
Bingo.
And
that's,
I mean,
exactly with who I want as a GM.
With the exception of maybe the Josh Norman move, honestly, I mean, no one could have predicted Steve Smith was going to continue to be productive at the time that they let him go. And I mean, Greg Olsen, I mean, how underpaid is Greg Olsen in comparison to the rest of the tight ends in the league right now?
As far as I know, it's on par. I don't know that he's getting paid that much different than the rest of the tight ends, other than the younger guys that are just coming out of college and getting these massive contracts as things go. But that said, actually, I mean, he isn't starving.
Go ahead, James. Can I kick in here for a minute? As far as Olsen is concerned, if I recall correctly, his production easily puts him in the top three as far as tight ends. I believe Kelsey in Kansas City and Gronk in New England are the only tight ends who produce more as far as yards and touchdowns than Olsen does. As far as salary, his contract as far as all tight ends in the league, not counting rookies, I believe is in the bottom 10, not bottom 10, but as far as top 10, if you rank top 10, he's somewhere around like that 8, 9, 10 range, and he wants to be in that top 3 range.
Okay. So perhaps a little underpaid.
And that was currently left on his 2 years.
But at the same time, I will, again, take the feelings out of it and the emotions out of it and be like, you signed a contract, dude. There's 2 years left. When 2 years come up, we'll talk again.
And that was exactly Gettleman's approach. And Richardson didn't like that. Olsen kind of threw a little bit of a tantrum to Richardson, and from what I understand, at least. And some words were exchanged, and it was kind of one of those situations, well, if you're just going to undermine me like this, maybe I don't need to be here. Well, maybe you don't. And that, you know, those kinds of conversations lead somewhere. And unfortunately, it's where we are today with our old GM right back where we are. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the season – it's going to be interesting to see how camp goes, I should say, with him coming in at this kind of time. This is exactly the kind of stuff that can undo a team, or it can spur a team to do something special. So I don't know what's going to happen during camp. That's the guys reported on Tuesday, I believe, to Spartanburg. So we'll see how things go over the next couple of weeks.
For the interests of being as factually correct as we possibly can, although I don't know when we started doing that, Neil informs us that Greg Olsen is the seventh highest earning tight end in the league, according to overthecap.com, which is a phenomenal website to use when talking about contracts. I noticed Neil and Rob, our Bills superfan, were also talking about Thomas Davis. Thomas Davis contract up soon, or is he also in a similar boat where he wants to get more money than what he's currently being paid?
He's another name that came up as well, and he's another one of those that, dare I say, are in their twilight years of kind of finishing out, and they are wonderful people. I don't want to make any mistake about that. They're great guys. We want them to retire in Carolina. But at the same time, like you said, it's business. You signed a contract. Well, come talk to me in 2 years when it's time for you to renew that contract. And I think everybody gets super excited about these mega contract packages, franchise player tags, and all of that stuff. It's a little bit premature at this point because you're still in an existing contract.
So, as I recall, having spoken with Matt Williamson before our division preview podcasts, this is the time of year where firing an NFL GM seems to make a lot of sense because there's not a lot of things that they need to do right now. And if you're going to start over, quote unquote, then now would be the time to get a new guy. Although it seems in the media, they're all going, oh, I can't believe a GM has been fired just weeks before camp begins. Who the hell cares before camp begins? Because camp is set. Your team is set. Your coach is ultimately going to make the decisions. And I think that's where a lot of this is getting overblown as well, is you still have the same coaching staff in place. You still have the same core nucleus in place. Now you just need the guy that's going to get the pieces for that coach. And I imagine that Riverboat Ron is going to have a little bit of input as to who the next GM is going to be, or is that not the way that the Richardson like to work things there in Carolina? No,
absolutely. So Rivera came out and did a presser yesterday on what his thoughts, or at least he did an interview. I think it was with ESPN Magazine or ESPN.com, but he was saying some great optimistic type of things. He and Marty Herney were watching tape. He gave Marty Herney some homework assignments, like go watch these guys, et cetera, et cetera. And he said he got some great feedback from Herney saying, maybe you should think about putting these guys in different roles, and gave all kinds of ideas that he hadn't thought of yet. So I think from the owner perspective, it gets you the GM in place that can do the deals that you kind of want to do or you want to get done, take care of your old guys, take care of your veterans with their retirement, whatever. And at the same time, you bring somebody in that's experienced. He was with the Panthers for many years. Is familiar with the organization, is familiar with the Richardson family and all of the roster and stuff like that. But you have to keep in mind, I think if I'm not counting correctly, there's only 10 players left on the Panthers that Mahoney was responsible for bringing on. So he's coming and seeing an entirely new team as well. So we have to give him credit where credit's due. He's kind of responsible for Cam being in Carolina and making that draft pick. But we also have to give credit where credit due that he is the one that put us in salary cap hell about just as recently as 5 years ago.
Yeah, I just wonder, Nick, how secure is Ron Rivera? How many wins does he need this year to be the coach the following year?
I think that's a little bit of an arbitrary question when it comes to wins. I mean, if you can prove that you go out there and can still run this team and be successful with it, I mean, most coaches would have been gone after the season they had last year. I think that's fair to say. And if he does that again, I think he's very much in trouble. But Ron will be the first one to tell you that in the NFL, everybody's on notice every day of the season. So he's just that kind of guy. I think he could be a longstanding coach here. I think he's night and day above where John Fox was in the 2000s. And it's I think he's got a long career at Carolina. If we can get all of this stuff sorted out and get the ownership on the same page as the GMs, on the same page as the coaches.
I'm going to make a huge assumption here, and we all know what assuming does. Did you hear the NFC South division preview that we did? And if so, where do you think the Panthers line up in that division?
I think the draft picks that they brought in this year are could potentially fundamentally change the way that the team works. I think what we were missing last year, we were very injury prone. The offensive line was just broken in half. Matt Khalil's back to anchor the line. We've got CMC and Curtis coming in from the draft. Offensive super weapons that are going to be kind of the boon of Cam, and I hope he takes advantage of all of it. The OC and coach staff are designing plays around those guys, putting them in slot, putting them in direct hikes, all of these kind of wildcat type stuff situations. There are all kinds of things that they could use to take advantage of those guys. Michael Orr is back in health from what I'm hearing. So that offensive line comes back, and that's going to be a real interesting team. From a defensive perspective, it's a matter of making sure that the linebacking core is all on the same page. As long as that stays healthy, as long as Luke and Thomas Davis and all those guys are there, the defensive line is solid. It's about the secondary when you talk about the defense in Carolina. So as far as ranking them in the NFC South, I'm more anxious to see where Atlanta ends up. It's very hard for me to look at anything to do with the Atlanta Falcons. We despise them so much, so it's hard to even research them. But at the same time, I think they're going to, it's going to be Carolina and Atlanta 1 and 2. I don't think that New Orleans has made enough moves. I don't think that Tampa Bay has made enough moves, but Tampa Bay is scary enough that they can knock any of us off at the same time at any given time. So it's going to be a fun season when it comes to the NFC South.
Well, I know what I like about potential super fans is when they agree with me. So good job there, Nick. That's
thank you.
That's fantastic. anybody have some questions for Nick before we let him go?
I guess I'll throw a question at Nick. Everyone here in the wonderful Next Fan Up community knows that I'm a beloved Cam Newton fan. Well, no, that's obviously a joke, but you have to convince me your job. I'm just letting you know, if you stay on board, your job this season is to convince me that Cam Newton is an above average quarterback. Do you think you can handle that? Do you think that's even possible to convince me that?
Please go revisit his rookie season stats and then come at me.
Okay. I'll get back to you.
It's one of those things where we, when he hit the scene, we had never seen a quarterback like that. He started a revolution in the league when it comes to running quarterbacks. If you look at who we've got now, Tyrod Taylor, Russell Wilson, you name it. There's at least five or six clones of what he started to put to what he brought to the league back in 2011. So now we've got this new kind of league, and it has caused offensive coordinators and even defensive coordinators to design things different. So when a player like Cam Newton comes into the league, it changes the perspective of how offensive coordinators and defensive coordinators plan a game. And that's when you know you have a special player.
Not to totally disregard, again, in the concept of trying to be as factually correct as possible, I do think Michael Vick was the beginning of that revolution. And we could probably even say that James' old quarterback, Randall Cunningham,
to go back even further.
But, you know, it's okay. Cam is, you know, one of many that are still out there.
I have two short things for Nick. One, D'Angelo Williams pretty much tweeted this week after you all fired your GM that he's willing to come back. He's taken them off his list as far as teams he would never play for. How much of that do you think is tied up in with, because you mentioned the ownership being family, with how they treated him as far as when his mom passed away due to cancer?
Oh, God, man. That's a stretch, James. Come on, man. I don't think it has
a grudge.
One, it's business. This is a business.
I get that it's business. But when no one from the organization does anything for him or consoles him in any way that he feels he should be taken care of, no matter how menial it is, when his mom passes away, I mean, you see other teams, the entire front office goes to a player's relative's funeral.
Right.
But no one from the Panthers showed up to his. And I get it. Like I said, I understand it's a business, but this is like one of your most talented players at the time when this took place.
I agree with you to the extent that they should have gone, or at least showed their respects and done that. Far as releasing him and letting him go to Pittsburgh, that was my comment about him, that being business. If he had not had he was on a 2-3 season bad run there. Back when, you know, what was it, 2012, you had Double Trouble, I think, where him and the two of them and Cam Newton were running, you know, all over the place. Since then, it had kind of died. So from the position of Gettleman and making smart decisions, he carried a pretty big cap with him as well. And he was wanting a bigger contract. Now, we as fans and we as the family of Carolina absolutely love D'Angelo Williams. There was nobody else that was more active in the Charlotte community, doing all kinds of stuff with Make-A-Wish and all of those types of there was nobody like D'Angelo Williams. And I would imagine he's doing the same thing up in Pittsburgh. But at the same time, it's Gettleman. It's business. And that was his approach.
All right. Second thing, just to piggyback on the Cam Newton stuff earlier, how much of that do you think is coaches finally adjusting to these mobile athletic quarterbacks coming out of school now, as far as offensive staff adjusting to them instead of 30 years ago forcing them into square holes?
See, I have this personal theory, and I'll come back full circle to the question there. I have this personal theory that we're coming back around to this epoch shift again in the NFL as a whole, as a way of how it's being played. So if you look at the 90s, it was mostly a run game for the most part. And somewhere in the early to mid 2000s, you know, we started getting Rodgers, Eli Manning, Tom Brady, all those guys came out 2003, 2004. It turned into a passing game all of a sudden. And now, you know, when guys used to throw 25, 30 passes, that was a big deal. Now we don't even bat an eye when Drew Brees throws 50 pass attempts a game, and several other guys, including Brady and those other guys I mentioned. Well, I think everything is starting to change back the other way. So it's going, we're coming back around to this kind of run-centric game. I feel it coming as these guys get older, these quarterbacks get older, you know, 10, 15 years into the league now. We're seeing some of the big hoss running backs come back. Ezekiel Elliott last year is a great example of that. Look at the season he had behind a powerhouse offensive line. I think when you get guys like Christian McCaffrey, other running backs that are coming out, those conversations tend to change back to focused run game. And I think that's where Carolina might see some really successful stuff this year, is with that run game. So I think we've come back to a run-centric NFL, or at least we're starting to get back that way.
Awesome. Nick, hey, go ahead and promote all the lovely podcasts that you're currently doing, and then we'll try and convince you that you should be a part of this one too.
All right. Well, I run we call it Geektainment, a TV, film, and video games. It's basically a couple of 40-year-old guys being huge man children, called The Concession Stand. We do that every week. New episodes are out on Thursdays. The other show we do is called Busted Wide Open, and it is what will become your favorite pro wrestling and WWE podcast, where we also talk about things like New Japan, NXT, etc. Those episodes can range from an hour to 2 hours, but we also do that every single week. This week we'll be talking about Battleground that's happening this Sunday.
Awesome. Well, Nick, like I said, we would love to have you. We're all a little bit smarter about the Carolina Panthers now today, so we appreciate that, and hopefully we can convince you that this won't be that much more extra work that you're already doing. And I think Neil has another comment to add to that.
Yeah, I think, Nick, you sound terrible. You look awful. You are very human league. I think you're going to fit in just fine.
Excellent. Well, as long as I get that approval from you, Neil, that sounds great. I'm excited to be here. Thank you very much for having me today, guys. And I'm looking forward to doing this more with you as we get closer to the season.
All right. So there goes Nick. Excellent job out of him. And as Neil sort of alluded to, I don't know what it is about guys named Nick, our chief super fan, our potential Panthers super fan. What the heck is it with these guys and their naturally gifted voice boxes?
He reminded me of Eric Young, and like Eric Young.
Ah, yes. Eric Young, now leading Sanity in NXT. That's a wrestling reference. You probably find out about it if you listen to Nick's wrestling podcast. All right, let's move on now to the next topic. And Neil, I know this one is near and dear to your heart, as the franchise tag deadline for negotiating an extended contract went by with nobody signing. And the biggest name, Greg, our Steelers superfan, would argue was Le'Veon Bell. But really, it's been Kurt Cousins who's gotten all of the news, Neil.
Well, I think it's not only Kurt Cousins, but also Alan Bruce, our GM. He's also been involved there.
So what's going on there? I mean, is Cousins going to be your quarterback next year, or is he going to end up, as Greg wanted to set up a Twitter poll about, the $40 million man in Cleveland?
When you say next year, I take it you mean not this coming season, but the following season.
Yeah. I think it is highly illogical to believe all of these reports going around that the Redskins are going to trade Kirk Cousins now. I don't believe that that's going to happen this season.
Well, the thing is, what are you going to get from a compensatory pick that we're likely to get the following year? Probably not. You know, Jay, we've had all this crap the whole week about Cousins. I can tell you what's going to happen this time next year, or come March next year, with the transition tag, which will set his salary at $20 million, and we'll say to the marketplace, you know, go for it, and decide whether we want to match that or not. Washington's biggest problem, Jay, is that they're not sure if this guy is a franchise player or not. And I think at the moment they're erring towards him not being a franchise player. And one of the interesting things you find in the media all this week since no deal was done, every time somebody mentioned Cousins, it was prefaced with franchise quarterback Kirk Cousins. I don't think Washington view him at all as a franchise quarterback. They would have signed him up. Now, look, as you know, Jane, I don't want to go into it too much, but I negotiate contracts on a daily basis. Sadly for me, it's not NFL contracts, so else I wouldn't be here. I'd be sunning myself in Florida with Rob. But with NFL contracts, still important details in NFL contracts goes like this. One, guaranteed money, and that's the end of the list. That's all that matters in NFL contracts. And Kirk Cousins was offered a contract by Washington, which really didn't amount to a great deal more than it would have done if he's a franchise tag next year, along with the money he's guaranteed in that. Not surprising that he didn't sign a long-term deal next year, where we'll finally find out what the market is for Kirk Cousins.
You know, you're in that position where Cousins is probably on the lower end of a top 10 quarterback in the league, which is where Baltimore was with Joe Flacco when they had to redo his contract. And it's one of those things where he's not the top quarterback in the league, but you have to pay him that money to keep him with the team. And as I look at all of our teams, of the rest of the superfans represented here, really, Rob, you're the only team that doesn't have a quarterback, at least not one set in stone.
Yeah, I mean, Bills are in a situation where they have what might be their guy, I guess similar to Washington, just on a lower financial scale, at least for now, because if Tyrod Taylor were to, you know, really blow up in the Rick Dennison scheme and play well, I mean, he would, you know, he might want to renegotiate. They renegotiated last year. He took a pay cut to stay with Buffalo. You know, there is a piece, you know, ESPN was talking about potential teams for Cousins. The Bills were mentioned as a dark horse because they could get out of the Tyrod Taylor deal. I personally don't see that happening. The Bills have two first round picks in the draft next year, in which maybe, I'm not ready to say it is, but maybe a very nice quarterback draft next year, so they'll have the opportunity to move up if there's a guy that they like, or if they're bad at football, which is usually the case. So I don't think that this is an avenue that they would go down.
Andy, would you rather have Tannehill or Cousins?
Cousins is better than Tannehill. It's relatively close. Cousins is better than Tannehill. Trust me.
No, I do trust you, which is why I asked you the question. Because, I mean, I don't know how long Tannehill has left on his contract, but I mean, I would imagine...
I mean, we could have moved on from Tannehill as early as this season if we really wanted to. The contract that he was given in March of 2015 was 6 for 96, but it was really 2 for 40, 15 and 16. So we could have already moved on. We could obviously move on from him if we want a year from now, but I don't think we will. Gase likes him more than me, but Gase knows a lot more about football than I do. So, and I really love Adam Gase. I'm just really trusting him on this. I do think, though, that Gase will outlive Tannehill in the Dolphins organization. Like, I think Gase is a good enough coach where he will be given a second shot if and when Tannehill proves to, you know, be an 8-8 quarterback.
James and Kevin, I'm not even going to bother with you guys because you guys have young quarterbacks that, I mean, I imagine you're all in on with Carson Wentz and Dak Prescott. So, Neil, I'll go back to you as you brought up the point that, yeah, Baltimore hasn't done anything with Joe Flacco since giving him the big deal. But, I mean, who else are you going to get other than Kirk Cousins to help bring the Redskins to the next level?
Well, that would be the next question for Washington. You know, do they pump the big money into Cousins by matching whatever deal comes in, and whether it's Cleveland's £40 million deal, which is not going to happen, of course. He may become a £30 million quarterback. How crazy would that be in this league? But yeah, what do you do then? And it's a question of a free agency and the draft. Do you go after one of the young guys who are backing up in the league, like who else have we got? McCarron at Cincinnati, one of these guys, or do we go into the draft and do what we did a few years ago and give up the barn for to get up into that top three or four picks to try and get one of these young quarterbacks in this upcoming draft? I was surprised they didn't take a quarterback in the last draft, but obviously they didn't feel there was anybody there for them, or nobody fell to them. They've got Sudfield as the young guy. He'll be entering his second or third year. And, of course, the great Colt McCoy. And I think there's many in the Washington organization who feel, well, the difference between McCoy and Cousins, is it that great a difference? I'm not quite sure. You have to remember, Jay, Cousins, yeah, he's had some great numbers over the last few years, but he has had an all-star cast in terms of high-quality offensive line, reasonable running game, serviceable running game. Running is not a great part of it all, but they've been terrific. You know, you look at the tight end we have with Garcon and Jackson and so, and Crowder. I think Washington would probably say to you, yeah, we could probably keep that nucleus and stick any half-decent quarterback in there and would get a reasonable return. Now, that's obviously not going to drag you into the playoffs very soon. But, I just don't see Washington going back to the draft next year.
Not to reopen old wounds, Kev, but, I mean, Washington could have gone all in on your boy, Tony Romo.
But, yeah, I'm just starting to forget about the man. I haven't looked at his social media in a few months now, and now you bring up his name. Oh, my goodness. Washington. I mean, here's my take on Kirk Cousins. As everyone knows here, especially Neil, I love Kirk. Top 10 quarterback, in my opinion, and not only slightly better than Tannehill, light years better than Tannehill, Quello. But I agree with Neil. I think next year that the Redskins – I mean, at this point, it seems that next year they're going to put the transition tag on Cousins, which Neil says is $28 million. But I don't think that's going to be that good for the Redskins, because someone is going to outbid the Redskins for Cousins. Because let's look at the teams next year who could possibly be interested in Cousins. The Cardinals will, because after this year, Carson Palmer will prove to Bruce Arians that he's completely done. The Jaguars and Blake Bortles will be looking for a new quarterback. The Saints and Drew Brees, I don't know, but depending on Drew Brees' health and what he does this year, the Saints could be in the market for a new quarterback. The Bills, although Rob said it's unlikely, it's a possibility. The Jets, so many, the Vikings and Bradford, who knows, Bridgewater situation. So many teams are out there that could top the Redskins offer if they put a transition tag on him.
49ers.
Especially if they're not in the 49ers, of course. Even the Rams with McVay, if once Jared Goff just throws a few interceptions up and down the field this year, they might even be interested in him. So if you don't have like a top five pick, because everyone knows that this may be a great quarterback class, it would make sense to offer Cousins a contract if they put the transition tag on him. And they're not going to franchise him because that would be a $35 million contract, which is just ludicrous. And they're seemingly not going to get a long-term deal done because if they really wanted to, they've had 24 months to get one done, and they haven't done it. So Kirk Cousins, this is definitely going to be his last year in Washington, and it's going to be really exciting, I think, to see next year where he goes, because I just listed a handful of teams who I think he could really be going to. So it will be fun. It'll be fun next offseason for Kirk Cousins.
For the second time in today's show, I will mention overthecap.com. The teams with the most cap space in 2018 will be the Detroit Lions. They clearly won't need Kirk Cousins' assistance. The New York Jets, which I think is quite possibly the number one destination for a Kurt Cousins. That would be the problem with the Jets. They would actually try and sign Kurt Cousins. The Colts, who obviously won't need Kirk Cousins' services. The Houston Texans, which would be interesting to see the development of Deshaun Watson. And of course, if Bill O'Brien survives this season. You mentioned the Vikings. Who knows what's happening with their quarterback situation? And then the Redskins. So while we are concerned about other teams outbidding the Redskins will actually be in a pretty good spot to keep him if the market dictates so. Neil?
Yeah, a couple of things there. First of all, outbidding is probably not the right term there. Other teams will make offers under the transition tag, and Washington will have a chance to match them. And if Washington matches that offer, then the bidding ends, so to speak. So that's the first point. Secondly, there's a lot of talk about Cousins having the power in this whole situation, but in reality, he doesn't have the power. He's going to play for Washington next year. Washington could decide that he plays for them the following year. And if anybody comes in with a bid, Fortinet's coming with a bid, Washington could match that, and he could be stuck with Washington for the length of that deal as well, which could be 4 or 5 years. And as you know, even in football, a year or two is a huge length of time. So Cousins, yeah, he's going to get well paid, and he can. I wouldn't mind swapping salaries with him, Jay, but he doesn't have all the power here in the situation. Interesting one. I think Rob is right. 49ers are the favorites to get him, obviously, with the offensive coordinator. Rams, don't think so. They're not going to. Are they going to give up on Goff at the end of next year? If not, what are they saying? They're going to be putting $45 to $50 million of their salary cap into Goff and Cousins? Don't know. Don't really see that happening. So,
I mean, if it was last year, they could go the E.J. Manuel route.
Yeah.
The Chicago Bears.
I think the 49ers.
The Chicago Bears are a couple of teams down from the Redskins in terms of salary cap space available. And, of course, we all know how I feel about the Chicago Bears quarterback situation. And if you don't, then go back and listen to our archive. Yeah.
And one thing I'd...
Wait, did somebody actually say they've got Mitch Trubisky, as in, like, the Bears are set at quarterback?
Well, they think they're set. Doesn't mean they are, but they think they are. They're not going to spend.
Well, we got a whole season to see how not set they are.
Okay.
They're not moving on it for a little bit.
Can we drag this back to the best team in the league, please?
Yes. Let's do that. Best division in the league.
Yeah, that's true. Jay, I would ask all of you guys, what do you think of our GM, the great Alan Bruce? It's just embarrassing. No?
I think that was completely low blow, super low class for them to go public with what they said on Twitter about Kirk not even responding to their offer, which on Twitter they made it seem like it was the best offer of all time, guaranteeing him $53 million. But as Neil said, that's really barely any more, then he's going to already, he's pretty much guaranteed to get the next 2 years. Because this year he's guaranteed, what, $23 million? If they place a transition tag on him next year, he's at least guaranteed $28 million. So that's like $52 million. That's $1 million less than he would be guaranteed from this incredible contract that Allen boasted about on Twitter. So, I mean, he was obviously trying to make Cousins look bad, but I think it completely backfired and made him look horrible, made him look like a little child. So, I mean, I didn't really have any respect for him just because he's a Redskin. I really don't know much about Allen, but it really, if I was a Redskins fan, that would really rub me the wrong way and how he's, what he's trying to do, handling the business with Cousins. But that's just my take.
Kevin, all they had to say, a classy organization, all they would say was, you know, we tried to get a deal done. It was possible to do it at this time. We're focused, Kirk. We'll take up these discussions next year. Hope to get a long-term deal done, and less time to move on for the time being. That's all they needed to say.
Yeah. It was extremely passive aggressive. It's like when my girlfriend is like, "Well, it's okay, but it would have been better if like we did this." It's like, "Oh, we're enjoying negotiating with Kirk, but we did offer him a great contract. He's just completely not interested." So it's like, "Oh my God, Allen, get over yourself." Him and Snyder are just. But I do love Kirk, so. It's hard for me to
just to go back, Kevin.
Side.
Go back to something you mentioned earlier about your house move. When Jay was talking about Tony Romo, in your new penthouse in Manhattan, how many rooms do you have on the wall?
How many rooms do I have?
Well, with pictures of Tony Romo on the wall, you know.
Oh yeah, he came and dropped off his bust the other day, full size. What will be in Canton one day. Transported from my living room. No, but I have a whole room dedicated to Romo, as you said, in my penthouse on the Upper East Side to Romo. His first ever touchdown ball. It's just beautiful. You guys should come see it one day.
One last topic to get to before we get to the great Christopher Harris, fantasy football guest extraordinaire, whom I failed to mention at the top of the show, was on today's podcast, but you already know because it's in the title and the description and all that. That's the beauty of podcasting. Is the other franchise tag name that did not get a long-term deal was Le'Veon Bell. And James, since you have been the quietest of the bunch, I will let you start with the Le'Veon Bell conversation. And let's see, what are your thoughts here on Bell and the contract that he was offered?
Well, Bell obviously thinks he's the top back in the league, which I really can't make an argue against it at this point. Aside from his off the field issues, the suspensions, the whether they be detrimental to the team or drug related, the most glaring thing is I didn't know the disparaging pay as far as the running backs, that before he got tagged, LeSean McCoy is actually the highest paid running back at only $8 million. So no running back in the league is currently making, I'm double checking right now for this coming season, more than $10 million. And, you know, Le'Veon wants, I believe, that 12, 13 range. He is pretty much the linchpin that holds their offense together, because in the postseason game against the Patriots last year, when he went out, their offense pretty much stymied, for lack of a better term. It completely fell apart. So I want to be on his side, but he has to clean up the off-the-field issues, whatever they may be, knuckleheaded situations, getting in trouble with, you know, just seemingly, you know, what he may deem like minor insignificant things, or just the smoking of the weed. You know, my thing is most players in the league will take a puff every now and then, but you know when you're going to get tested. And that's the other thing that's always mentioned a lot. Players know when they're getting tested. You know how long marijuana stays in your system. It's common sense. I mean, I shouldn't even say common sense, but use that knowledge to not hurt yourself in negotiation.
You know, speaking of running backs and negotiations, I mean – you and Rob are forever connected now because, you know, Shady McCoy wasn't necessarily coy with wanting a larger contract from Philadelphia either.
Well, you know, we also had that idiot who coached before Doug Peterson, whose name I tried not to mention
more fear that my mouth would probably burn to ashes. And for him to pretty much say that, you know, the running game is, you know, one of the key cog elements in how his offense, fast paced as it is, runs, and you're not giving arguably one of the best running backs in the league the salary to compensate that is a posture. So, I mean, just every time I think of LeSean McCoy in a Bills uniform, a little part of me dies inside because we have not found a suitable replacement as far as his production goes. I'm eagerly waiting for Ryan Matthews to get healthy and cleared medically to resume football duties by the team doctors so he can be cut, because I no longer want to see Matthews in a uniform in Philadelphia going forward. I'm happy with Blunt. I'm glad D'Angelo Williams has not put us on his team of teams that he will not play for. I think him and Blunt would be a nice 1-2 punch, but we have a number of young backs who want to use going forward. But if it is one move that I wish could be reversed over the last 5 years, it's McCoy being traded to Buffalo.
And yeah, by the way, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
And so, Rob, before I do get to Kevin, because he's got a guy on his team that's going to have a lot to say about best running back in the league, Shady McCoy, you know, obviously would have a little something to say about that as well.
Yeah. And I think he was probably one of the most recent running backs to sign a big deal. And his deal, I think it was he signed an extension right when he came to Buffalo. And I think it was for 5 years for $40 million. And it's funny, just since then, the cap has gone up. I think it's, you know, it's been 2 years. So the cap has gone up over $20 million. So you're seeing, you know, these big money deals, and, you know, Le'Veon Bell should probably, I think it's fair for him to probably be the highest paid back, just based on talent. The only problem is that he's one strike away from being suspended for the year. If I were him, if it was me, I may tread, you know, a little carefully with the, you know, trying to get, you know, as much as you can in the shop. That being said, you know, given his age, this will probably be his one shot for like a real big money contract. Because if he signs a four or five year deal after that, he's at the age that McCoy's at now, you know, 29 years old, where you never know when running backs are going to expire. But once they hit it, they're done. I think that this is like kind of the big contract for him. So I appreciate him going to, you know, to try to get as much as he can. He said he shouldn't be paid like, you know, the way he plays, he shouldn't be paid like a running back, but be paid like a player because he catches the ball well. You know, he's a multifaceted weapon. He's not just a running back. And I get that point. The only thing is he's kind of backed himself into a little bit of a corner because of, you know, the drug suspensions, and he's one away from having a year-long suspension.
And Kev, I'm going to give you the last word on this and bring in Neil real quick, because Bell has said that he's not necessarily looking for top running back compensation, but best player in the NFL kind of compensation. He's clearly not going to get paid like Kurt Cousins is going to, Neil.
Jay, I was shocked that Bell didn't sign his deal that he was offered. I just could not believe it. Crazy, crazy move from the player there, especially with his on-field injuries and his off-field problems that James was mentioning. And I also wonder, the running back tag number is going to drop, isn't it, over the next couple of years? Because the current running back tag is also inclusive of Adrian Peterson's massive deal of a few years ago. Don't they run the franchise tag average over a five-year period?
You might be right. I do not know. So I cannot say, I cannot do the in interest of being factually correct here in this instance.
That's okay. We're back to normal then.
You're right. So with all of this looming, Kevin, your running back obviously is going to, I mean, I think most people would agree, Ezekiel Elliott is on par to being the best running back in the league. He's obviously locked in for either 3 or 4 years. Again, I cannot be factually correct with how long rookies are locked into their contracts for, especially first round draft choices. But when his rookie deal is done, he's going to be looking for even more money than Le'Veon Bell is looking for.
Oh, well, absolutely. And who knows what the salary cap will be at that time in 2020, 2021, and probably be over $200 million. But one last thing on Le'Veon before I get to my beloved Zeke. I pretty much agree with everything Rob and Neil are saying about that, about Le'Veon. Shocked that he didn't agree to his contract because it included $42 million over the first 3 years. It would have been $4 million, then the next highest paid running back. But as Rob said, he wants to be paid as a running back and the number two wide receiver on the Steelers. I think he's being a little bit too greedy here. And just to further Rob's comments about his suspension and his, and I mean, James's comments about his weed history and one more suspension now per year. But I just think the bigger problem for him is the injuries. I mean, the last three times they've been in the playoffs, maybe twice, like he's gotten hurt in the playoffs or in the regular season and missed the playoff game. So like, can he really be relied on? Like if you're going to miss the playoff games, like, great, you're winning a lot of fantasy championships for people, but if you're not going to be in our playoff games, what good do you do us? So that's all about him. Now Zeke is on pace to be the best running back in the league in a few years, probably will be. He's a little scary though for me. I mean, the guy's 21 years old, mentioned his birthdays this week. He could possibly probably get in trouble again this week because he definitely hasn't learned from any of his mistakes. I mean, he's been in the NFL, what now, for 14, 15 months. He's had three, four problems. I mean, it's just very worrisome as a fan. I mean, I don't think he's going to be suspended this time around, but it just doesn't look good for the future. He's got to clean up his act. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. After he's being investigated for his domestic violence or his sexual assault from 2016 Ohio State, he goes ahead and punches someone in the face, allegedly in a bar. That whole thing during spring break, lifting up the girl's shirt. I mean, yeah. You just can't be doing those things when you're Ezekiel Elliott, running back of the Cowboys, when you're already under investigation. And they're all, three of them are related to violence and sexual assault. It's just not a good look for Ezekiel and not a good look for the Cowboys. I mean, not that I really care. It's a bad look for the Cowboys. You guys can make all the jokes you want about them being criminals and whatnot. It really doesn't bother me. It's sort of funny, honestly. But it's just not a good look. And I just, it's, Ezekiel, he's just not a good person, I don't think. Great running back, but it seems to be he's just an arrogant person. So that's all I have to say about Zeke. But hopefully he stays on the field for 16 games. Most of his seasons with Dallas, no suspensions, but the kids just got to grow up. And next time you want to buy weed at a weed store, don't go into yourself in Seattle. Have one of your friends buy it for you.
Every top rookie needs a fall guy. Isn't that Chris Carter?
Exactly. No, yeah. I mean, that's 100% true. I'll be his fall guy.
Well, let me kick in with this real quick. The investigation into his bar fight, if you will, is currently being suspended due to a lack of witnesses and inability to contact the victim.
Yeah, I read that. They actually, the Dallas PD actually tweeted at one of the alleged witnesses, DJD, I think his name is. They're like, please come in and speak to us. So it's just funny. And that's one last thing about the NFL. The thing that bothers me most about the NFL, out of all the things that bother me, is that they think that they're above the U.S. legal system. Because, I mean, they're stopping their investigation, but the NFL probably isn't stopping their investigation. Like, if no. The U.S. legal system
finds... They're still investigating the domestic dispute, the domestic violence assault from his college days. That's still in their investigation. Yeah.
The point is, they think, I mean, like... it just doesn't make any sense. They try to put themselves even above the law most times. So it's like an investigation. Nothing is going to come from the investigation in 2016 at Ohio State. It's been a year and a half now. I mean, probably in 2 years, the NFL will suspend Zeke for four games because of his 2016 incident. It's just ridiculous. Like the NFL takes forever to get things done. And then people, it's just absolutely preposterous. Their penalization penalty and methods and whatever. It's just if they suspend Elliott for his 2016 alleged domestic abuse, which is not proven whatsoever. There's no evidence to show that what she's saying is true. And now the punch in the face, there's no evidence saying that he actually punched someone in the face. People are actually coming forward to say that he didn't punch anyone. He was just standing in the middle of the group. Like, if the NFL suspends him, they're sort of going down a dangerous path, suspending him for two games with no evidence. Like, you can't just suspend people for alleged crimes. It's just,
Kevin, say that again. You can't suspend people for alleged crimes, or like when physics actually...
No one's talking about your quarterback.
No, nope, we're not going not down about the
physics
rabbit hole.
Are actually no, involved in deflating no, footballs? Yeah.
No, stop.
You
no,
can't
no,
actually...
No,
def-
no.
That's the
no,
thing.
Five,
the
no.
NFL can do whatever they want. They almost took Tom Brady to the Supreme Court. I mean, that's how ridiculous the NFL is in terms of suspending all their players. And so...
I know.
It's not even just, I'm not even just bringing this up as a Patriot fan. I'm bringing this up as the fact that we all were sitting there saying the NFL is ridiculous in what they're doing. And everybody else was like, haha, look at what they're doing to Tom Brady, and not realizing the NFL's coming for your players next with this ridiculousness. Like, you're exactly right. Ezekiel Elliott is going to be suspended
four years from now
for something that happened 4 years earlier.
I know, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Ray Rice, remember with Ray Rice, they supposedly found nothing, they couldn't get anything, and then the video comes out of him punching his then-fiance in the elevator. And that's the reason they're still investigating right now with Zeke Elliott with the domestic violence dispute that's still open
as far as the
police has closed it. Well, they don't want a situation where they close it and something comes out later that they never knew about. And that's what they want to avoid.
Well, then reopen the investigation. Be like, we were not privy to this information.
The investigation
is not closed.
Close
it and then reopen it. You can just be like, we did not know this existed. No one submitted this evidence to us. We had no idea about this.
Even though it's not legal proceedings, I don't think they want to enter in something that's akin to double jeopardy.
I mean, it's the NFL. They can double jeopardy all they want. There's no rule against that in the NFL, I believe. It's just not the legal system.
True.
They don't have a constitution to abide by.
It doesn't look good for them what they're doing right now. They close it early and have egg on their face again.
By the way, since we're on the topic, might as well stick with it. Jaguars defensive end Dante Fowler was arrested earlier this week for traffic violations. Which, of course, makes my love of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
It's the curse.
Yeah, I guess it is.
What kind of traffic violation?
Mm-hmm. This is what happens when you claim a team as your boyfriend.
I mean, the thing is, though, all of this news comes out now about all these other violations that never were made public and arrests that were never made public. I mean, this guy apparently doesn't know how to drive. 10 traffic violations in Florida in less than 2 full years.
And can I just want to point out something as someone who lives in Florida. Do you know how tough it is to get a ticket out here? Like, crazy. Like, I've lived in like crazy cities for drive. I've lived in Atlanta. I've lived in Boston. Driving out here just like during like season is insane. And if you can manage to get 10 tickets in this, like in the state of Florida, like, they only pull you over if your car's on fire or if your car is one of the silver alerts. Like, that's it.
Oh, yes. Well, Dante Fowler.
He shouldn't even have a license.
I mean, dude, it's called Uber. Look into it, man.
Right? we can't let this go. It is the Jay Soderbergh lightsaber from hell, which is stabbing into the Jaguars already. It's over.
Oh, man. I just want to point out, my boyfriends last year did very well.
We're reaching the point where Blake Bortles is going to drop a bottle of aftershave on his foot and break a toe, and that'll be him for the season. And
that would be beneficial for the Jaguars.
Oh, man.
That's horrible. All right.
You're killing them, Jay. You're killing them.
And the last item here before we get to Christopher Harris, which will wrap up the show, Mike Williams, the rookie wide receiver for the LA Chargers of San Diego, apparently has a herniated disc. He got another shot in the back to help try and alleviate some of the pain. He is risking missing the entire season. And then, of course, in the in wanting to be as factually correct as we possibly can be, Neil did find out that all rookie contracts are 4 years and first rounders have the fifth year option, which will be good for those LA Chargers and Mike Williams. So he can they can get in as many years as possible on his rookie contract. If
when you say play. It was a shot in the back, Jay, was that like a painkilling injection, or was it an Aaron Hernandez style shot in the back?
Oh wow, that's
wow,
man! You can tell we've been recording for a while, taking deep shots. It was an epidural, but the word was escaping me, and I couldn't find epidural in my vocabulary until just now. So I went with shot in the back. Thanks, Neil.
On a serious point, though, Jay, that must be devastating for any young rookie coming in, you know, and possibly have their season ended before it even gets started.
Like Dante Fowler?
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. He was the same. He missed his rookie season. It must be terrible. You know, the guys have just been so excited getting drafted so high and everything's looking fantastic. And then, boom, season could be done. Huge blow. But then if you draft guys with back injuries, what can you expect?
Very true.
Yeah, it stinks for, I say San Diego, LA. This is the... this happens to them a lot where they end up drafting someone and they get injured their rookie year. The last rookie that they had that played all 16 games was Melvin Ingram's rookie year, which was, I think, like 2012. So like every first round pick they have ends up getting injured for some silly reason.
It's not as bad as Cleveland. The last rookie they had play 16 games was Otto Graham.
I think they had like 20 rookies play 16 games last year.
I think Neil just really wanted to get in one more shot of Otto Graham.
Fair enough.
Otto
Graham,
yeah. into the show.
We can't have enough Otto Graham.
All right. Let's talk some fantasy football with Christopher Harris. All right, Sean Watson at the Watt 1734. Here you go. It's Christopher Harris and Pod Vader back together again for, I don't know, this is like your fourth or fifth appearance here, Chris. How are people only now finding out that we still talk to each other?
Well, you know what I find is that Twitter is a funny thing. You feel like you're tweeting things way too much. Like I'm constantly hyping whatever, you know, and then I do it 20 tweets in a week, right? And then 100 people go, oh, I never heard about that thing. I'm like, yeah, it's because you follow 7,000 people on Twitter. You never see anything.
By the way, Christopher Harris of Harris Football, harrisfootball.com. You want to follow him for all your fantasy news and insights and your podcast coming up 5 days a week at the end of the month.
It is. Right now it's two a week as of July 31st, 5 days a week until either the end of 2017 or the end of my life.
Well, let's hope that 2017 comes first.
Yeah. Well, because I can't promise anything. You know, I can't, let's face it, in this crazy universe of heat death, and you know, you just can't promise.
You know, I got an email, and it wasn't a spam email either. It was somebody who was legitimately reaching out to me as the head of content at Blog Talk Radio to schedule an interview with a startup company that the name of their company is called Swan Song. So you can,
oh boy,
you can pre-record messages for your family, like happy birthday, happy 80th birthday to like your children.
My God. We were talking about Gimlet before we started, and that's like the premise of, maybe it's not Gimlet, but it's the premise of a podcast I listen to, like a radio show podcast, you know, a narrative podcast, like a social media that's able to take somebody's voice. Do you know what I'm talking about? It can take your loved one's voice and... Yeah. I'm stupid and can't remember, but I listened to that whole podcast. It's pretty good. It wasn't Gimlet, though. I have completely screwed this up. But it was like, yeah, if your loved one has passed away and you have enough voice files, they could turn it into like an artificial intelligence in your loved one's voice and you could keep having a relationship with them.
That's
like a sci-fi premise.
Yeah. Isn't that the movie Her? Isn't that that whole deal too?
I mean, I don't think that Scarlett Johansson is supposed to be anybody other than someone he falls in love with. Like, I don't think it's supposed to be a past loved one.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, it's easy to fall in love with someone like Scarlett Johansson, but that's another podcast. Speaking of falling in love, we did get another tweet here from Monty, who's actually a member of this podcast. He's our Raiders super fan and wanted to know, at Harris Football, does at the Real Pod Vader's kiss of death impact your rankings? Should we avoid all Jaguars players this year?
He is referring.
Yeah.
From when springs the kiss of death? Yeah.
Yeah. So last year, my boyfriends were the Kansas City Chiefs, who actually did fairly well. But the year prior to that, you and I famously had a bet about the Vikings versus the Atlanta Falcons. It turned out I was just a year ahead of time. And so he's referring to that. When I declare a team my boyfriend, meaning the team I'm going to root for and follow more closely, because, you know, it's boring being a Patriots fan. you know, that's what he's referring to. And this year I've declared the Jaguars as my boyfriends. I really like what they've got going on in Jacksonville.
So is the idea that you're picking them because you think they're going to be good or just because you want to follow them?
Oh, no, I think they're actually going to be pretty good, too. And okay. I know a lot of that is putting some blind faith into Blake Bortles.
You know, I got asked for a big sleeper, a big playoff type sleeper. I can't remember, for a column I wrote like in the sometime over the winter, and I picked the Jaguars. I feel like I came down from that a little bit after I rewatched some of his film and just was like, oh, I can't. It's so bad. So I'm putting out this almanac, right? This play, fantasy football, Harris Football player profile almanac. It'll be out August 1st, and I rewatched so much film this summer and wrote like 200 to 300 words on every player. And Bortles I actually did extra research on Bortles and did some statistical research on, like, are there historical precedents for players being as bad as Bortles has been for 3 years and then turning it around and being good? And I lost maybe a little of my love for the Jags, but I mean, I'll just say he can point to Eli Manning. You know, Eli Manning sure did throw a heck of a lot of interceptions those first couple of years. So maybe, you know, maybe he winds up being Eli Manning. I would, you know, tend to think it's likely that he's whatever Joey Harrington, Mark Sanchez, David Carr, you know, that's probably more his neighborhood. And if that's the case, it's hard to say the Jags are a playoff team, even though you're right. The roster is interesting, especially the defense. But I will caution everybody and myself and you and say, you know, we say this every year. They always sign a free agent. They always sign two free agents. And then it's just not quite good enough. I love Calais Campbell going there. I think there's a chance. AJ Boye went there too, right? The corner? I think he did.
Yep.
There's a chance the defense is good. I don't mind it. I don't think you're giving them the kiss of death. Put it this way. If your kiss could not come close in its power to Blake Bortles' kiss. If they're bad, you know, you're going to just be a little barnacle, little tiny smooch on the side. It's going to be a giant kiss from Blake Bortles that kills them.
See, and that's where I agree as well, because I do. He's got plenty of the offensive weapons, and now he's got a stud running back that should carry that team. You know, I think I see no reason why the Jaguars can't compete. And just like I did last year, not only did I have boyfriends, but I had boyfriends on the side who were the Oakland Raiders. This year, my boyfriends on the side are the Tennessee Titans. And I really like what Tennessee has done, too. They may actually surpass
that was a little, and that one's, they're almost like more fashionable, right? I think they're over under win totals, like 9 or 8 or 9, you know, people actually sort of like Tennessee. With very good reason. When you build out from an offensive line like that, all of a sudden it all comes together. We talk about offensive lines that acquire new pieces and how it automatically makes them better, and it doesn't. There are plenty of, I mean, Minnesota did it a couple of years ago, and they took, you know, they hit the skids. It's no guarantee, in other words, that because you draft linemen or because you sign free agents, you're automatically a good line. But Tennessee was an example of someone who all of a sudden they're a top three line, and It just means the offense is probably going to be good. It almost doesn't matter. You know, if the line is that good, the offense is probably going to be good. And I do have – I don't love the defense. I don't love the secondary. But Gerald Casey's a really good player. I'll just throw it back on you. Same division, Titans, Jags. Who finishes with a better record?
I picked the Titans to finish with a better record.
Okay.
I've picked the Titans to win the division.
That's very reasonable. Sure. Reasonable. Although Houston.
See, my problem with Houston is their quarterback, because I do think it's going to end up being Deshaun Watson, not Tom Savage. And yeah, you can say that they did just fine with a Brock Osweiler, but I don't think Deshaun Watson, I don't think there's, in the history of the NFL, there are very few rookies that come in and bring their team to the playoffs.
Right. Although, you know, Deshaun Watson's stock, fantasy or otherwise, has been helped by Dak Prescott an awful lot. You know, people squint and say, well, he's Dak Prescott. And if he is, obviously Dak is an exception to the rule that you just said. It's an interesting division. You know, there's four teams you can make the argument that all should kind of be 8-8. And then someone's got to win a couple extra and someone will lose a couple extra, because that's the NFL. Every, you know, just come down to a penalty or a field goal at the end and suddenly you're quote unquote good at 10-6. If I look all the way across the eight units in that division, offenses and defenses, I think Houston's is still the best unit of all eight, even though they do lose Boye. They, you know, there are questions, but they're getting JJ Watt back. They were very good in November and December last year without JJ Watt. And I'm not saying that guarantees that they're a really good team, because of course you're right. Big questions on Houston, but I think I probably pick them still to win that division.
You also have the leader of that defense being Mike Vrabel. And I believe Vrabel is going to be a very good coach in the NFL, but this is his first go round. Mm-hmm. You know, that who knows what ends up happening, what tweaks he makes to the Romeo Crennel program that don't actually work.
Or they work so much better. I don't know.
Yeah.
You tell me that they were pretty good last year. They lose a very, very good corner, and that's a problem, but they gain J.J. Watt. I say it's a net gain. I don't care who the coach is.
As we continue with the everything is related stuff, we've been talking a little bit about the Scott Fishbowl, which, for those if you don't know, it's this giant fantasy competition run by Scott Fish, thus the Scott Fish Bowl. And we were talking, and the one thing that I don't like about the particular format is this email draft, which takes about a week to complete.
Yeah.
And it was driving me nuts, because I unfortunately couldn't sit around the computer and be ready to make my pick whenever it was time to make my pick. So I pre-ranked a lot of my choices, and unfortunately by doing so, I got screwed out of the quarterbacks, because there was a major quarterback rush that I wasn't able to react to because it happened sort of overnight. What are your thoughts? What's your favorite kind of draft? Is it on the computer, in person? What do you think is most effective?
Effective, I don't know, but fun is in person, of course. Mm. You know, you're there with your friends, of course. That's the most fun. I don't tend to be – I'm not a big drinker in life, really, so I'm not the guy at the draft who's all messed up because he had eight beers and two rounds, you know. Like, the friends that I tend to do live drafts with, it's a pretty sober crowd, but we still have lots and lots of fun, and we're not completely blotto and, you know, making ridiculous, stupid picks at the end. So we have good fun. We've got good fun all the way through, and then we're always happy when it's over. Agreed, the email draft is intolerable. Oh, intolerable. You know, there are still, that thing started, I think, 11 days ago. There are still drafts that are going on.
Ooh.
There are still drafts that are not even close to being done because people are using like the full 8 hours because they're not paying enough attention. And oh boy, if I was in that league, I'd be losing it. Ours has been over for a few days, thank goodness. You know, I waited on quarterback, but not for the same reason that you did. I still don't buy. You should explain that the fishbowl scoring is very different from usual fantasy football, where he's tweaked it to the point where he's really trying to level the playing field, that the average quarterback, the average tight end, the average running back, they all kind of get about the same number of points. So he's given a lot more points to tight ends, for example. But for
he
me,
has,
still
but
just,
quarterbacks still end up on the top in this in the scoring.
They do, and it's a two quarterback league, right? So you're right. It's essentially it's really like a one quarterback league with a super flex where you can start another quarterback, which is what you should do. So essentially, it's a two quarterback league, and yes, the quarterbacks still have the most fantasy points, but just I like in that league, I wound up with Carson Wentz and Eli Manning, and yeah, they're not great or anything, but they're going to wind up with 85 to 90% of the points of the top guys. So just the flatness of the position is so that this is a long way of getting around to say I think you're fine. I think you're fine getting crummy quarterbacks there because they'll still give you 80% of the production you'd have gotten from Aaron Rodgers.
Right. So. Not to totally recount what my draft was, but speaking specifically about my quarterbacks, I ended up with Joe Flacco and Alex Smith as my starters. And then right. after realizing they have the same bye week, picked up Deshaun Watson. But this is where, again, everything is related and bringing it full circle. My very last pick of the draft, I got Teddy Bridgewater. What are your thoughts on the Vikings quarterback situation this season?
Bridgewater's not going to play.
You don't think so?
No, I'm pretty sure he might never play again. Like
what?
I don't know anything. Well, his leg basically came detached. There was nothing holding it together anymore. Nobody's ever had that injury.
He's already throwing.
Yeah. I mean, remember Marcus Lattimore? Remember that knee injury?
Unfortunately, yes.
Right, like, and he's in camp. What are you talking about, Harris? You're an idiot. He's gonna play. No, he's not. Like, I don't know anything, and so I could be completely proven wrong. I'm not saying I'm a reporter. I'm not on the ground. I don't want to talk to those people. I'm never going to talk to those people. By those people, I mean athletes in general. It's for me, it's just not interesting. So I'm wildly speculating, but there's nobody who's ever had this knee injury has ever come back. So I. I'm not counting on Teddy Bridgewater. I'm not in this league where it's 12 teams drafting whatever 22 players. Fine,
right?
It's a quarterback heavy league. I'm not saying that's a bad fantasy pick or anything, but from a Vikings fan perspective, there's a reason Sam Bradford's there. There's a reason they're talking about extending him. Like I think that organization's pretty close to moving on.
Hmm. Well, that's disappointing news. Still,
I know I love him. I love Teddy Bridgewater.
And you'd have to take Teddy Bridgewater over Sam Bradford, no?
Very different, you know, like Sam Bradford at least has a big league arm and Bridgewater certainly has like a bottom 10 arm, but moxie seeing the field, keeping you in a game by not, oh, for example, on Thanksgiving, throwing an interception deep in your own territory with 30 seconds left in a tie game. Like, you know, these are the things that Sam Bradford is always going to do. And I think Teddy Bridgewater would not. So yes, for my purposes of my NFL franchise, neither would like completely make me, you know, gaga, but I think you could win with Bridgewater.
So while that quarterback run was happening, of course, everything equals out. I ended up with a phenomenal wide receiving core, not to talk about those guys, but I do tend to have a problem this season with my running backs and how to gauge which running backs to really target because I mean, besides the obvious guys like Bell and Johnson and Elliott, I mean, who else are we looking at in terms of value at the running back position?
So value is a proposition that I probably don't have an answer for right now. And I'll tell you why, because my longstanding policy with fantasy since, you know, I was at ESPN for 8 years. That's how, you know, we first worked together and so now I've been doing this on my own for a couple of years. On friendly terms, I left on my own, like no, like letting go. I was not part of any purges. They asked me to come back and I politely declined. So my longstanding policy has been I don't look at average draft position until like mid-August. I just don't want to be influenced by what the market thinks. So constantly people are going, why are you so high on blah? Why are you so low on blah? And I always go, I am, because like in my own head, obviously my ranks are perfect. and usually they wind up being, I wind up being perfect. That's usually how it goes.
Yeah.
But like, so value, I don't know because I don't know where people are being taken. But your point is, for fantasy purposes, is so correct that the running backs are equally, if not more scary this year than last. And last year was the time you know, the market told you take wide receivers in the first round, and that turned out wrong. So now the market's going, oops, we're wrong, take running backs. You know, like the market is, I wouldn't follow the market. The right answer in most fantasy leagues is always, like, if you can get one of those running backs you feel good about, that's who you should get, because that's the scarcest position, and it's a game of scarcity. There are wide receivers go 40 deep. You know, you can find solutions. But the problem comes down to, yeah, I get to three guys, and one of them might be suspended. You know, Zeke Elliott, who knows? I feel pretty good about LeSean McCoy. I feel pretty good about Melvin Gordon. I feel okay about DeMarco Murray and Devontae Freeman. And then I start to throw up on my mouth a little bit. And I run out of players I like. You know, I get to Lamar Miller, Jay Ajayi, Jordan Howard, Todd Gurley, those are gonna be number one running backs in fantasy with all the upside in the world. But scary, scary, scary downside, and at some point I go, I might be just take a receiver.
At the beginning of this podcast, we spoke with a guy who's looking to become our Panthers super fan, and he mentioned how everything in the NFL is always cyclical, and he thinks that there's the cycle is going to start moving back towards run heavy teams. But my only issue with that, and I didn't bring it up while he was still on the show, sorry, Nick, you don't get a chance to refute this. My only issue with that,
I'm in the back, Jay.
my only issue with that is that while it might start to go in the direction of reacting almost sort of like the way fantasy players are overreacting in the draft, I don't think there'll be an overreaction. And even if there was, I mean, the move is to really get that committee. There's so many good running backs that, you know, you can have two or three and you can spread out those carries. And for fantasy purposes, that's death.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, even just like from an NFL trends perspective, I could never say like in 20 years that we won't be back to having more of a 50-50 running back, running play wide, running play, throwing play split. I don't know. You know, it could be. They'd have to change the rules though. Because right now there's just the risk reward for throwing is too high, right? The reward is too high. Right. There's not enough risk, which is based on pass interference and based on how physical you're allowed to be at the line, defensive holding, and how well quarterbacks are protected and how well wide receivers are frankly protected. You know, you can go over the middle a lot easier as a little guy than you used to be able to. So I can't say that won't happen, but my tendency is to think, no, the reason those rules are in place are a combination of safety and also it's a popular sport because people like scoring. And so, like, probably it's still headed in the direction of being a throwing league. But your point about committee backs is absolutely right. That's the way teams want to build right now because running backs get hurt. And I think when a generational talent comes along, if you think Leonard Fournette is a generational talent, of course you take him. And you try to do it the old way. But if you don't have a generational talent, there's 6-7 potential amazing, you know, head and shoulders above the rest of the crowd running backs in the league. And then there's a lot of pretty good players. Okay, they can do a few different things, but they're not great. And the way, if I'm an NFL team, the way I want to allocate cap money is, I'll just have a few of those guys, and then as soon as they get expensive, I let them go and I get a few other ones because it's just not that hard to replace.
I can't believe 20 minutes has already gone by, but I can't let you leave without asking you at least one Patriot question, and I have two for you. And the first one is fantasy related. I'm looking at your wide receiver ranks, which were just updated on July 17th at harrisfootball.com, and you have in standard scoring Brandon Cooks higher than Julian Edelman. Yet in PPR, you have Edelman over Cooks. And I'm curious why you're high on Cooks.
Because I love him as a player. I just love him. So for this almanac that I'm going to be putting out, I did film grades. So every single player, in addition to a smart alecky profile that I write about each player, I'm also giving a grade across like four different dimensions, maybe five, I can't remember, like speed, quickness, hands, routes, and situation. A through F. And I think I might have given 3 A pluses for speed, and Cooks got one of them. And I might have given like 4 A pluses for quickness, and I think Cooks, I'm pretty sure Cook got one of them. He's a ridiculous human being. He's ridiculous. And I know what the argument against is. It's super up and down. He's been frustrating, and the Patriots have a tendency to spread it around so much. And my reaction to that is, yes, so do the Saints. Do you think anybody spreads it around more than Drew Brees? It seems to me he's going from a Hall of Fame quarterback to a Hall of Fame quarterback. Situation where they're going to throw it to him deep sometimes, and then there'll be some weeks where it's frustrating. But he'll win me 4 weeks because he's going to go bananas, and I recognize that Brady doesn't have a big arm. Brees has less of an arm, maybe probably about the same. They're both, I think I rated them both like C plus arms. Anybody in the NFL can throw it straight up in the air, and Brandon Cooks can go get it. He is a crazy, crazy talent. So this is much more about the talent.
To me, with a healthy Gronk, Brady's going to be throwing those touchdowns to Gronk, and he's going to be moving.
Not from 75 yards out. Like you are going to get those plays with Brandon Cooks. It's impossible to have Brandon Cooks on your team and not get those plays. The thing, every argument that you're going to make about Cooks in New England is an argument that people have already made about Cooks in New Orleans. It's the same argument.
I just see the same player. I just see the same player where you're right. There's going to be weeks that he will absolutely win you that week. But there's going to be other weeks where he's not going to be a part of the plan. He can't be, because he only runs one route.
You weren't paying as close of attention in New Orleans. It's the exact same situation they had in New Orleans. It's why people got frustrated with him in New Orleans. And I agree that players like him they look better in aggregate, right? If we're going to look at season-long ranks, there's no question. If you're going to add up his fantasy points, well, he had those 40-point weeks, so it covered up for his, you know, for the pukey weeks, no question. But he was, what, the number 8 receiver in fantasy last year in standard league. Like, I'll take it. I'm okay. I get it. I get that I probably have to build around the idea that he's going to be an up and down player, and I probably should pair him with receivers that are a little steadier. But I'm telling you, don't worry. There are 500 plus attempts in that offense. Gronk is going to get his. Edelman's going to get his. Cooks is going to be. We are going to love him. He is awesome. Oh,
I have no doubt that we're going to love him. The problem will, of course, be if he decides to throw a temper tantrum like he did in New Orleans, which is why he's no longer there.
I don't agree. He's not there because they didn't want to pay him. I really doubt it's about a temper tantrum. I just think that's all echo chamber stuff. Who knows? Who knows what was said to whom? I think what he said was, "I wish I were in a situation that I would get that I got the ball a lot." And you know, and they were like, "Well, you aren't." And he's not in one now either. But he's gonna, you know, he got paid, so he good.
The last thing is something that I'm sure we can both agree on is how awesome was that Super Bowl?
It's so funny because, you know, I have such a big Twitter following, and so, you know, 30 seconds of my Twitter following was not happy, you know, and I'm tweeting out a picture of me like not being able to believe it. And in a Brady jersey, like celebrating. And that was not what people wanted in that moment. So I've tried to celebrate relatively privately as opposed to, but yeah, it was, I mean, they're going to call it, if people want to look at it objectively, it's one of the greatest games ever played. It probably, in the modern era, is the greatest game ever played. Like, I didn't see the 1958 Colts-Giants game. Like, sorry, I wasn't born yet. It's the greatest game ever played, at least in the modern era, probably. And it's easy to say when your team wins that, but, like, objectively speaking, it's the only overtime Super Bowl. It's the most ridiculous comeback in NFL history. It's, the you know, the most amazing sequence of events. It's pretty freaking incredible.
Listen, you know me, I'm a Bledsoe guy. I will forever be a Bledsoe guy. But but that,
you're that, the one.
I know. That game, I mean, it almost turned me.
So So, I mean, but you will agree that Brady is the greatest he's the greatest quarterback in NFL history, even though you're still a Bledsoe guy. You will
that's
admit
right.
that.
Yeah. Tom Brady is Tom Brady's the GOAT in NFL history. Yeah. He's just not the GOAT of the New England Patriots.
Well, yeah, I guess that has its own little internal logic, doesn't it?
It does. It does. Christopher Harris, where can people find you?
HarrisFootball.com, and you can find the podcast everywhere you get fine podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram, Facebook, all those various places. And I hope people will check out the Almanac, because my God, I just mentioned to you before we started, physically I'm doing well, but mentally and emotionally I'm hanging on by a thread. It's, you know, you're working hard on something when the prospect of 5 podcasts a week starting actually means I'm going to rest more because I will have finished the Almanac and it will be, have been delivered. But one thing that's cool about it, by the way, is it's not your traditional print magazine. It's a PDF, and I will update it twice during August. So you get it once on August 1st. It's probably going to be like 150, 200 page PDF. It's quite extensive and fun. And if you're not laughing, I did a bad job. And then August 14th and August 26th, I think, I'm also going to send out completely, like, I'll send it out again, basically marked up with changes based on what happened in training camp and preseason and stuff.
Oh, see, that's the beauty, folks. You want this almanac, you want it real bad, and you don't even know you want it that bad yet. So make sure.
Last year was the first one. You saw it last year.
I did.
You got your.
It's sweet, people. You want to sign up and you want the Harris Football Almanac. All right. Christopher Harris, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. I'm sure this will not be the last time we speak this season. That's specifically for you, Sean Watson, out there, who I'm sure you're listening right now.
Thanks for having me on, Jay. It's awesome to catch up with you, buddy.
All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, another marathon podcast from yours truly on the Next Fan Up podcast. You know, the Sunday crew, they do a great job of keeping the show under an hour, but for some reason the guy who used to be a producer has no idea of how to keep time. Sorry about that, but it was all good stuff. What am I going to cut out? Am I going to cut out Nick, our new potential Carolina Panthers super fan? No, I'm not going to cut him out, and I'm absolutely certainly not going to cut out Christopher Harris. I mean, why would I do that? That would be ridiculous.
You can cut out that bit about the Patriots.
Yeah. Do we have room for one more breaking story? I just getting word that the NFL is looking into Ezekiel Elliott pushing one of his fellow classmates in seventh grade on the playground to cause him to scrape his knee, and he may be suspended for 2 games now.
That's brilliant. Good work out of you, Kev. Good work out of you. Before we do wrap things up completely, I want to let you know about a campaign that this podcast is taking part in. It's called 2 Pods a Day, or #2PodsADay. The goal of this program is to introduce all of you to other podcasts, independent podcasts out there every day. There'll be 2 of them every day for the month of August, and we're a part of that program. And there were other shows that are part of this program, shows like Life Under the Laundry Pile, which is a great show for moms who are part of the geek culture. This Is Important, which pits 2 guys in a debate style over things that happen in everyday life. And Stacey's Pop Culture Parlor, Neil, a show from your side of the pond, all about pop culture type stuff. So, you're definitely going to want to check out those podcasts and all of the podcasts that will be featured as part of #2PodsADay through the month of August.
Good stuff.
All of our division previews, our postseason prediction preview show, all of that has been done. If you missed that, you're in luck because we're a podcast. So you can go and check out our archives on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, anywhere great podcasts are heard. Subscribe to the show so you don't miss any of our future shows coming up, and listen to the old podcasts that we have out there available to you. The division previews obviously will be fresh and clean, probably until training camp starts. Although training camp has officially opened for some teams, rookies have already started reporting. So training camp is not that far away. And my annual trip to Patriots training camp coming up in the second week of August, where I will see them practice along with my boyfriends, the Jaguars. Look at that. You get two teams for the price of one. And since practice is free, it's really for the price of none, which is a fantastic bonus as well. You guys have any plans on seeing your teams during training camp?
No. I'm not in the same city as my team's training camp.
So what? You take a vacation. And Neil, I'm sure, would love to fly over to, I think training camp for the Redskins is actually in Pennsylvania, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. It's when the games start, then I turn off.
Excellent. All right. Well, for all of our super fans, for Nick, who is our potential new Carolina Panthers super fan, although you're about to hear in a moment how Andy really made him feel welcomed. For Christopher Harris, remember to go check out his stuff at harrisfootball.com for all of your fantasy football needs. I am merely Pod Vader. This is Landry Jones. There you have it.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.
Yeah, Nick, go ahead, Andy.
I'm Andy. I'm the Dolphins guy. I was late. Actually, I had a demo with Air Canada. I'm sorry, guys, but it's a business. I had a demo with Air Canada. It was very tense. Anyway, okay. So, Nick, I think, you sound great. You do sound great, and you're going to be a great addition. But I really disagree with a number of things you said. Two things. Number one, the fact that it's the pendulum is going to swing back and somehow it's going to be a run-centric league again. Are you out of your mind? No way. It's just never. No. With fantasy football. And number two, and I understand you're a Panthers fan, and that's great. And the Panthers have definitely had more success than the Dolphins. That's for darn sure. But the fact that you think it's going to be a run-centric game fits your Cam Newton narrative. And I would ask you this. What does it say about Cam Newton that the reason you're so bullish Panthers is the run game, and Cam Newton's a part of that run game, but like, I don't know, like, what does it say about Cam Newton that after the Super Bowl the Denver defensive backs were like, verbatim, we wanted to make him throw? Think about that. He's a quarterback, his job is to throw, and they were like, we want to make him throw because he's not good at throwing. Like, what does that say about him?
Look at what a turnaround Dallas had last year with Dak and Ezekiel Elliott. That's really was my point of reference there.
I agree, and I just don't think the pendulum is going to shift.
Than these kind of elite quarterbacks making 50 pass attempts every single game. And I don't think it's going to happen this season, but I think we're at the very beginning of the transition. That'll take multiple seasons to get there, where we come back to this, you know, have the bus at the back of the line that runs straight through the offensive line.
I guess what I'm asking is, you know, Matt Ryan in 5 or 6 years
is coming back.
He's Brady's age. Like, he's going to be throwing the ball 50 times a game. Derek Carr and Andrew Luck are going to be throwing the ball 50 times a game when they're in their 30s and they can't move, you know. I don't know. I just think there's always going to be those guys.
Maybe. But I look at the Falcons. The Falcons are a great example. Devontae Freeman got hurt last year, and, you know, Matt Ryan had to throw quite a bit more. But I think you bring him back, and I can't remember the other guy they picked up. I know Devontae because he's a Noel guy. There's all kinds of stuff that's happening that kind of gives those indicators that at least, Neil said it, at least it's it brings the balance back rather than maybe becoming a run-centric league again. And it's not just about...
I would agree there's more balance. Like, I would say back in, like, 2011, 2012, or maybe 2010, 2011, I would say that's the most pass-centric it's been.
I mean, we loved it as fantasy guys. Don't get me wrong. I mean, people were picking Aaron Rodgers number one in fantasy drafts because he throws the friggin' ball 50 times a game.
Exactly. You
know, of course.
Aaron Rodgers is the best.
Okay. Go ask Tony Dungy, I guess. But I think that's going to change, and I think last year was a nice indicator. I know I'm looking at this season going into fantasy mock drafts and all of that kind of stuff very differently than I did last year. Antonio Bryant going first last year in most of the drafts. If you look at the fantasy
numbers. I picked him first. And I was in
and he had a great season.
I was a victim. He had a great season. But I still could have done better things with that pick. But yes.
So I'm seeing a lot of the mock draft stuff there. I don't know how much about fantasy you guys talk about on here, but I'm seeing a lot of stuff change already. back, and the swing that I'm seeing, the trend that I'm seeing is back to the 2006, 2008 mentality. LaDainian Tomlinson getting number one kind of picks. You're seeing running backs, Ezekiel Elliott's getting up there high. Devontae Freeman's getting up there high because people are expecting Atlanta to do well. So there's all kinds of stuff changing. I'm not seeing the wide receivers and the quarterbacks, you know, in the top five anymore. So that was where that was. Oh, there's a lot of stuff that goes into that comment about how I think we're going back to a run-centric league. A lot of it's based on fantasy. A lot of it's based on trends I'm seeing in drafts. It's not so much to do with the Panthers. I think they're actually going to pass more this year because of Curtis Samuel and C-Mac.
Nice. All right. Well, Nick, we're going to record the rest of our show. So I did not expect you to hang out for the whole show. You're more than welcome to if you'd like to, but we just spent 20 minutes on the Panthers alone, which means these other topics that we have to get to today. I have no idea how we're going to accomplish this in less than an hour.
Sorry, I can be a little chatty from time to time.
It's quite all right. It was good stuff.
Awesome. Well, hey guys, it was great to meet everyone. How you guys do this every Thursday?
So yeah, we do a show on Thursday. In the off season, we're doing shows on Thursdays and then shows on Sundays, and they're about whatever topics come up. We tend to try and lean a little bit more towards what's topical in the news, but we'll discuss all sorts of things, especially if there's definitely no news to talk about. And then during the season, the Thursday shows are preview shows, and the Sunday shows are recap shows, and the recaps are super easy. You call in when your game is over, you tape about 5 minutes on Uber conference, and then we put that all together to be released Monday morning. And then Thursdays we do the previews, and then during that week, we'll pick what are the top games of the week, and we'll have you record a super fan battle where you and the opponent that you're facing that week will go head to head and basically talk about what to watch for in that particular game. And then we'll use those to put into the Thursday show.
You do that for preseason as well for the games?
No, in the preseason, basically what we do on Thursdays is we have each of the super fans write a list of things that they're watching for in the preseason game that week. So it's more of not who's going to win the game or how the game is going to be coached or anything like that. It's more about I want to watch, you know, this player who will be in the second half because I think he's going to add depth to the squad, stuff like that. I want to see how Jimmy Garoppolo performs against the number ones because he's the future of the franchise, that sort of thing.
Carolina opens the season with 49ers, Bills, Saints. So we should be 3-0 by the time we get to the Patriots in October. So we really have no excuse with that kind of schedule.
I actually do have you 3-0 before you face the Patriots, and then you take your first L.
Well, then it's Lions, Eagles, Bears, Bucks, Falcons, Dolphins, Jets, Saints, and then we get the Vikings in December. So, I mean, that we really have no excuse this year. Everything's kind of lined up. The stars have aligned, and that's going to be my approach for the season.